Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death. This episode is on my playlist, Dining with the Disappeared, where we talk about people who have vanished. We discuss a timeline of events and where they disappeared from, and sometimes that place has an element of food to it. Not always. I'm Stacey Lee. Let's begin. This case is one that has not received the news coverage it deserves. We talk a lot about how some missing persons cases and some murder cases get lots of coverage, and others fall through the cracks. This one has definitely fallen through the cracks, and I want to help shed some light on it if I can. This is Monica Carrasco. She was 16 years old when she disappeared on October 2, 2003. Monica was born in 1986 and was living in Balmoria, Texas at the time she vanished. Monica had been through a bit of a rough patch. In 2000, her father, Ramon, died of a heart attack while being treated for bone cancer. The heart attack actually occurred right in front of the family, and the family had to watch paramedics try and bring their father back to life. It was very traumatic on the entire family. Monica fell into a deep depression at the loss of her father, so much that she had received treatment at a mental hospital. She was severely depressed, and she was also suffering with anorexia. Monica had lost 50 pounds in a matter of weeks, and her mother was very concerned about her. You know, we hear it all the time now, check on your happy friends, check on your friends who seem to be in a good mood and doing well, because sometimes that is just not the case. Monica's nickname was actually Happy. She was always smiling and she got good grades. She played the saxophone, she was active at school, but she was in fact very depressed. Even though she was struggling, Monica's grades were important to her. She was very studious and even talked about going to Harvard and working for NASA. Monica was also very religious and believed in her Catholic faith. She was active at her local church and went to Bible study often. When Monica was discharged from her stint in the hospital, she moved in with her aunt and uncle, Velma and Bella Beza, and their children who lived near Balmoria. Monica was angry with her mother for forcing her to seek treatment at the mental health facility, and she didn't want to live with her mother anymore. Her relatives gladly took her in, hoping to help the situation and repair the relationship between mother and daughter. Not long after Monica was released from the hospital and moved in with her relatives, concern about her grew. Monica was not following the high-protein diet she was supposed to be following, and she was not putting on any weight. Not even her Aunt Velma, who Monica loved, could get Monica to eat. Monica's mother stayed very involved and took Monica to her doctor's appointments and tried to monitor her nutrition as well. Then Monica had an appointment with her psychiatrist that seemed to set her off, make her very upset. This doctor told Monica that until she started to eat and to put on some weight, she could not return to school. Monica was very, very unhappy to hear this, and she was angry. So now we've got a 16-year-old girl who is struggling with her mental health. Her father has died. She's depressed. She's got an eating disorder. I mean, you know, this is kind of a recipe for disaster, and I don't know what I would do in her parents' shoes. I don't. The family held a prayer circle, and everyone told Monica that they supported her and wanted only what was best for her. Her mother, Kathy, kissed Monica goodbye and left her at the relative's house. 2 days after the prayer circle, on October 1st, 2003, Monica called her brother Juan at around 8 o'clock in the evening. They were talking on the phone when Monica started to act strangely. She asked Juan, "How come you didn't tell me that I was Jesus?" Juan asked her, "Who told you that you were Jesus?" Monica replied, "The little birdies told me that I'm Jesus." At this point, obviously, Juan became very concerned. He knew that Monica was on medication, but she had never acted this way before. He chalked it up to a side effect of the medicine she was on, and towards the end of the conversation, Monica seemed like her old self. Monica asked Juan if she could come and live with him, and Juan said, "No, you can't come and live with me until you're better. If Tia Velma tells us you're better, then yes, you can come and live with me." The two ended their conversation, and Monica went to her cousin's room to play video games. I always find it fascinating when people are struggling with their mental health, how they get a fascination with Jesus, especially if they're religious. Those delusions of grandeur always seem to rotate around them thinking that they're Jesus or God or something. The way our brains are wired, you know, to go to that when we're struggling so hard. It's interesting to me. At around 11 p.m. that night, Monica headed off to bed. Her cousins stayed up until about 1:30 a.m. and played video games. Before they went to bed, they peeked in on Monica and saw her sleeping in her room. The next morning, Velma woke up around 7:30 and began making breakfast for the family. She went to Monica's room and saw that Monica was not in her bed. Now, Monica was known to go on early morning runs, and she would also go out and sit in the swing in the yard and think and pray sometimes. So Velma assumed that's where Monica was at. Velma went to check the swing set, and Monica wasn't there. Velma then went into Monica's bedroom and saw that her running shoes were sitting near the closet, so she knew Monica had not gone running. At about 9 a.m., Monica's mother, Kathy, called Velma to ask how Monica was doing. Velma then told Kathy that she couldn't find Monica and that she assumed she had gone for a walk. Kathy, however, was very concerned. She left work and went straight to Velma's house. Kathy's concern was that Monica may have gone on a walk and collapsed because she was very weak from not eating. Kathy then called Monica's brother, Juan, and told him that Monica had gone missing. Juan told his mother that Monica had asked to come and live with him in Austin, and they thought maybe Monica had taken off in that direction. By the time Kathy got to Velma's house, Velma had called the police, and the cops and all of Velma's neighbors were looking over the property. The police went into Monica's room, and nothing seemed out of place. There was no sign of a struggle, and all of Monica's personal belongings were in the bedroom. They did see that the pajamas Monica had been wearing were gone, and so was her Bible. When they realized Monica was barefoot, as none of her shoes were missing, they grew more concerned. Monica's room had a door that led to the outside, so police began to theorize that someone might have taken Monica through that door. Monica's uncle was the justice of the peace at the time and had a lot of connections to law enforcement. Within hours, the Texas Rangers, the local police, and search and rescue with helicopters were canvassing the area looking for Monica. It had only been 2 hours since she was last seen, yet she was nowhere to be found. Monica Carrasco had disappeared off the face of the earth. Both Aunt Velma and Uncle Bela underwent polygraph tests. Velma passed hers. Bela did not. Here goes your broken record. I am a broken record on this issue. Polygraphs are junk science. No one should ever take a polygraph. Period. They looked for 3 solid days and found nothing. Weeks went by and then months, and now it has been almost 20 years since Monica Carrasco was last seen. The theories on the disappearance are as follows. Some people believe that Monica took her Bible and went out to pray and was met with foul play. Some people believe that Monica walked to the nearby interstate and met a friend who picked her up and took her somewhere. The problem with that theory is that everyone who knows Monica has been interviewed and they all claim they were never contacted. Some people believe that Monica went to the interstate and was picked up by someone dangerous who murdered Monica. And some people believe that she was talking online with someone she met and that person took her away. Some of the reports I read about Monica said that she had been diagnosed with schizophrenia. Other reports said that wasn't true. But we do know that Monica was very depressed, and we know that she had made some strange statements to her brother, which indicates she may have been having a psychotic episode. There are really no additional clues at this point in time. Monica Carrasco would now be 37 years old. She has been missing for more years than she is known to be alive. When she was last seen, Monica was wearing a beige nightgown and perhaps teal shorts. She would have been carrying a large Bible. Monica has dark brown hair, and at the time of her disappearance, it had red streaks in it. She has dark brown eyes and pierced ears. She has a chickenpox scar on her forehead and a small mole on her left cheek. Monica's mother, Kathy, recently gave an interview. Her family has not given up on finding her. The family is desperately seeking answers and needs some type of resolution to this disappearance. Monica's uncle has passed on, so have some of the other relatives. In the 20 plus years that she has been missing, it is really quite baffling. She literally vanished. You know, they had a lot of people looking for her in that area. She had to have gotten in a car or something. That's the only thing I can think of. Monica's mother, Kathy, maintains a website called missingmonica.com that you can visit for more information on this case. If you have any information, anything at all that you believe might help this family, might help Monica, please contact the Reeves County Sheriff's Office in Texas at 432-445-4901. You can remain anonymous. On behalf of our community here at Dining with Death, I want to send the family my love and let them know we're thinking of them. And even though it's been a really long time, we still hope for resolution. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, Dining with the Disappeared. Hit the like button if you liked the video, subscribe to my channel if you want to see more from me, and you can also join my Patreon. In the end, the goal there is to donate money to police departments that have cold case DNA storage that can't be tested because there's no funds, and you can help with that. Stay safe, my friends, and be kind to each other, and I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant, Sweet Tango Apples, guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.